Is this show gluten-free?
No, honey. Without Chris, this is gluten fall.
Welcome to Gay Talk 2.0, the ultimate podcast for your dose of dish.
Good evening, ladies and gents, and welcome to another episode of Gay Talk 2.0, an LGBT podcast streaming live on Digital Stream Radio, where you can access that live stream every Monday at 6 p.m.-ish Eastern Standard Time, and you can do so by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. On today's show, after a short hiatus, we're going to welcome back Dr. Evan Goldstein for this month's Tales from the Tale. Today's discussion will center around what he believes is the number one essential for successful anal sex. My name is Tom and I am your host. And as always, I'm here in the studio with my friends, starting with the first one.
Hey, y'all, Nick or Trish.
And
Jay.
And welcome you all to The Dish. So we're here. We're queer.
Jay, come on, man.
Okay. A little bit.
You were like a beat behind.
Yeah.
A little bit.
The Dish. She's nasty. Hold on 1 second. I didn't want you to listen to while I was popping open my beverage. But anyway, we're back. There's a lot of things going on. Certainly a lot of things that we're going to be talking about regarding the news. But I quickly wanted to just toss it over to my bitches to talk about a little bit about our week. So, Nick, why don't we start with you? You've had quite an eventful weekend.
I did.
So why don't you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. Cut me off if I talk too long. So I'm officially yellow.
Like this?
You can't. Oh, okay. No. He muted me. So I'm officially yellow.
Yellow in the sense?
So my friend told me that they have a friend who at a certain point in their life decided, I'm not going to go by my age anymore.
Right.
So this is my year of yellow instead of my year of 34, because I need brightness and, you know, change and just like uplifting energy in my life. So this is my year of yellow. I am 34, but really it's
just yellow.
Yellow.
And yellow is such a positive, fun, bright color, right? Mm-hmm. So you walk into a yellow room. I mean, you walk outside and the sun is out. You instantly feel good. Yeah. So that's a good metaphor. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. I celebrate anniversaries at this point.
Right. It's my 9th anniversary of my 25th birthday.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was my 17th anniversary of my 25th birthday.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Yeah. It's a lot of years.
But no, I mean, you guys took me out on Thursday. We had a blast. It was great. Right. And was then fun. I spent Friday with my older sister, who cooked me dinner, which was wonderful. And then I spent Saturday with my brother and sister-in-law, who we all know now are having a baby girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so they gave me a gift of $50 in my, you know, in my card. And I was like, oh, you don't have to do that. Thank you so much. And then they took me baby shopping and I spent $350.
Right. So,
yeah. That was my weekend. And then I worked last night.
So basically they gave you a $50 discount.
Kind of, yeah.
Love it.
But I mean, it was... I had a great weekend. It was good to see my family and spend it with them. Not too crazy. I am a little tired, but
good.
Yeah. And when it comes to babies, you always overspend.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I know, especially with me, what happens sometimes is I go out and I want to grab a specific gift, but then I see that this also goes along with this. So it goes from a $50 gift to $250 real easy, real quick.
So quick.
So
fast, super quick.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the important thing is that, you know, although you're exhausted and you did a lot of running around the state this week, it was your birthday and you had a wonderful time. And, you know, that speaks for itself, right? Because last year, really, our birthdays weren't really that eventful. I mean, they were meaningful because they were small and intimate. But this year, you really got to an opportunity to do a little more, which is great.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
What about you, Jay?
Busy.
She almost died in the Delaware River.
Literally.
So, yeah. So, let me see. Saturday, I went to a bridal shower.
Mm-hmm.
And then from a bridal shower in Shelton, I drove up to East Haven to a quinceañero picnic.
Okay.
And then we were supposed to drive up to Middletown, New York.
Did you see that commercial about the quinceañero plus one?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
No.
So the poor girl, she couldn't have her quinceañera because of COVID. So in 2021, they're celebrating her quinceañera plus one. Yeah, so it was 15 plus one.
Oh.
Instead of sweet 16.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm.
So, because, you know, I think here in America, they celebrate Sweet 16. In most Latin American countries, it's your 15th birthday, which is sort of kind of like your introduction into
society,
womanhood, et cetera. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So, yeah. So then we did that. And then we were supposed to drive up to Middletown, New York to then leave in the morning whitewater rafting with my wife's family. But I drank a lot.
Of course you did.
And, like at 10 o'clock at night, I was like, we're going home. And my wife's like, okay, we'll pack and leave. And I was like, okay. And she turned around and I was in bed. And I was like, no, we're going to leave early in the morning. I'm done. I ain't driving anywhere. Because even though I wasn't driving up alone, I'm sure everybody else was going to fall asleep.
Because
everybody had been active all day, drinking, you know, doing events. I was like, nah, I see myself. It's a 2-hour ride, you know, hour and a half. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be exhausted by the time I get there. And then we did the whitewater rafting on Sunday. Had a blast. I hurt my finger.
So, she's all bandaged up.
Yeah, they got me.
She's pricked up, bandaged up, and, you know, he's got to exercise the finger.
I got to exercise and put some ice on it.
Nasty.
Other than that, not bad.
That's good.
I'll get my finger game on point now.
Do you, though?
Do you?
You're going to need a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
So I spent my weekend, my hot ass weekend, building a gazebo that I bought, a monstrosity. It's 14 feet by 12. And we decided to build it Saturday. I woke up at 6 in the morning, took down all my string lights and everything, and then started building this thing.
She got up early. She was really feeling productive.
Thankfully, my friend Paul, you know, who I'm friends with at the bar and who's been coming over on Fridays for bingo, you know, he was like, hey, dude, you know, he works at Home Depot. So he knows how to, you know, build these things.
He works where?
No, excuse me. He works at Lowe's. Sorry. Not Home Depot.
Well, I was going to say Lowe's. Depot, but.
And so he came over like around 8 o'clock in the morning. And the poor guy, here we are, him and I just putting this thing together. Just two people. Took us 12 hours. Halfway through, he decides he's going to suffer from heat exhaustion.
I had
purposely took towels and I had a cooler that was full of ice and water and threw the towels in the ice water and left them there. All of a sudden he's like, Tommy, I don't feel well. I don't feel well. And he just starts throwing up.
Oh God.
He got to him. So I'm pulling towels out, putting towels on his head, stuffing towels like in his body to regulate his temperature. And he came around and, you know, kept drinking and drinking water.
Drinking water.
Okay, water. I'm like, what?
Water.
Hydrating.
And then like Gatorade and ginger ale just to get some sugars and stuff in the body. But we finished it. And the past 2 days under that gazebo has been bliss.
It's beautiful.
Because prior to that, you couldn't enjoy the space, right? So I had created this amazingly beautiful like stamped concrete patio, but you couldn't enjoy it. Right. You couldn't enjoy it because of the heat and the sun was always blaring all day long. Now with the gazebo, it's a different story. It's like
the,
a whole
new gazebo.
The gazebo, yes.
Thank you.
It's amazing. So that's what I did.
Nice.
So, needless to say, was
I literally don't know how you're functioning. I mean, that
I'm in pain.
That whole thing that came, was it like 600 pounds? Steel,
750
wood?
Pounds.
Like, no.
Yeah.
Tom was like, well, why don't you come over? I'm like, I'm baby shopping.
She loves to enjoy the space, but God forbid if I ask her to help me out.
Oh, bullshit. I came over and I helped with the pergola.
With what?
The pergola.
You held one piece of wood.
That is helping.
Screwing it in.
That is helping. And I supervised when you took out when you took out the front walkway.
Well, you got to remember, sometimes some of us like to build and others like to supervise.
Yeah, I'm good at it.
I don't need a supervisor. I'm my own boss. I don't need a supervisor. I need a helper.
Yeah.
But she's forgiven because it was her birthday weekend. And obviously she's not going to spend that building a gazebo. So no worries. A gazebo. Sorry.
Thank you.
So nonetheless, you're forgiven. But next time I have a project, bitch, you're here in freaking boots and all.
I don't have boots.
I'll buy you some. Waterproof
Walmart.
Ones,
Walmart.
Yeah. Steel toe boots. Nice
boots.
But anyway,
it looks so butch.
So we're excited to have Dr. G come on board, but I feel like if we get into this next conversation, we're probably going to go down a rabbit hole, but we're going to do it anyway because we do have these stories that we need to cover. So I want to start off with saying that there's a lot of things going on right now in the news in regards to Afghanistan. Obviously, it's very detrimental to the people of Afghanistan in having the U.S. pull out, but it's time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's time for, I believe, in my opinion, that we pull out because we've been there for 20 years and you can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves. For 20 years, we have tried to institute a stable government in that country, tried to provide them with the means to be able to take care of themselves. And since the announcement last year with the previous administration that we were having every intent of pulling out in April, the Taliban has been making progress in regards to taking over some of the outer skirts of the main city or the capital of Kabul.
Mm-hmm. Which, and I don't want to, you know, take away from the fact that we lost so many lives and we've put so much money into this 20-year war.
Right.
Trillions
but,
per year.
But the reality is, as we have been slowly pulling out and the Taliban have slowly been advancing and then had the ability to take over the government, what did we accomplish? What were those lives that we lost and that money that we spent? Like, it just blows my mind.
Right. It's a tragic situation for the people that are left behind in Afghanistan. And if you haven't been watching the news or you've been living under a rock all weekend, Kabul fell last night. Kabul as a city officially fell under Taliban rule and control. The president fled the country with God knows what in his possessions. And you know, and I'm not going to sit here and bore you with the details of what's going on, because obviously it's on every major news network and we're not one of those major news networks. But what I do want to talk about is the impact on LGBTQ plus people in Afghanistan. You know, when you think about all of the changes that have come as a result of, you know, having the U.S. occupy Afghanistan for so long, you tend to see that certain groups like our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ plus community had a little bit more freedom to be themselves without the fear of being persecuted in most major cities there up until the announcement of the withdrawal. And what we're starting to really think about now is now that the U.S. has officially announced it has every intent to withdraw, what happens to these LGBTQ plus people, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, we have support systems in place in other countries like here in the U.S., in Canada, that are willing and able to provide assistance once the individual is here. But how do they get out mm-hmm. of Afghanistan if they weren't like an interpreter, for example, for the U.S. military that we're helping out that can get these special visas? How do they get out? You know, because the sad part about this story is that, unfortunately, if, and it's only a matter of time, actually when they fully take control of the entire country, they're going to institute Sharia law, which will allow them to actually persecute both men and women who practice homosexual sex and could end up in their deaths. Mm-hmm. One of the punishments for homosexual activities among men and women is death. And it just hurts my soul because I know the freedoms that I enjoy here. And I know how hard it is to not have those freedoms. I've known the fear of being attacked for who I am as an individual, not to the point of violence in most cases, but I know that fear. But these people are in real mortal danger, and it's right. really, really, really troubling. What say you?
God, I don't know. This is heavy.
Yes, it is. But it's the truth, right? I mean,
the last update that they actually had on CNN states that the Taliban now controls the capital city.
Yeah.
This was a update about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah. They took control. So they the only control. Thing that they don't have control of is a certain part of the airport that the U.S. is actually keeping under their control to be able to get personnel that are part of the U.S. and U.S. citizens out of Kabul.
And they did state, you know, that it says here, President Biden admitted that the collapse of the Afghanistan government unfolded more quickly than the U.S. anticipated.
Right.
I think it was just the same amount of time I expected it to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of the way they are.
Whether we pulled out 5 years ago, 6 months from now, or 15 years from now, the end result is still going to be the same. If the people that are there in power don't want to help themselves and rely on foreign help and the assistance of the UN and the US and other nations to fight this war for them. It's like, this is your country. You have to take responsibility and protect yourselves. And unfortunately, they're not doing that.
And the LGBT population, definitely, you know, unfortunately, you have people that are going to be forced into hiding.
So I wanted to point out one more thing.
Are you going to talk about Adolfi?
Yes.
Okay.
So very importantly, so I was reading this article that was published on The Advocate, and it was actually authored by Adolfi Okporo. And Adolfi actually was one of our guests.
Mm-hmm. And he's amazing and doing amazing work.
Amazing work. He himself was a refugee from Africa. He came from one of the Western nations in Africa and actually came here as a refugee and started this network, which allowed refugees to actually find resources once they arrived here in the U.S. or in Canada to be able to find safe spaces and programs to assist them in acclimating to their new spaces. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful guy. And you know, he's bringing up the question, what happens to our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan, and what can we do as a nation and as a humanitarian effort to save LGBTQ people in Afghanistan?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, looking at this article that you have shared with us, to be honest, it's pretty scary. So we have organizations like the Rainbow Railroad, and what was the other one, Tom? We just talked about it.
Asylum Connect. Which is an app,
which can help facilitate getting these individuals out. But I don't want to take away from the LGBTQ plus people, but it's not just them that need to get out right now. Canada has officially announced that they are going to receive or allow 20,000 refugees to enter Canada. And now the U.S. needs to step up and say how many we are going to then support. And then we need to figure out, through these organizations, how we can safely get them out. Because, I mean, just like right before the show, we saw that another plane was shot down of Afghan. It was an Afghan military plane trying to flee the country, and it was shot down by Uzbekistan in their military airspace. So how do then we allot the funds that are now hopefully being pumped into these organizations to get these people out? That being said, too, we need to embrace and engage all the LGBTQ plus philanthropic foundations, individuals, to start funding these organizations that can help get these people out and get them safe. I mean, literally, I literally can't conceptualize how to actually safely get anyone out of a state where, you know, it's now completely controlled by a terrorist military organization.
Right.
Like, how do you go about doing that?
Right.
And I know that I had made a joke earlier, and I don't, not in a, you know, negative way, but it's like the Underground Railroad, right?
Right.
How do we actually make it so that these people are getting out safe and creating pathways for them to get out safe?
Right.
And how can we help besides donating money? Like, what can we do?
Right. Yeah. Because once they're out, the resources are there. It's how do they get out?
Not necessarily. In some circumstances, like if they came to New Haven, we are a sanctuary city.
Right.
So there are resources here for people that are refugees, but a lot of places don't have that. So it depends on where they get placed. No, right.
So I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Once they get out of there and they arrive here, if they're going through something like, for example, Asylum Connect or the Rainbow Railroad, there are resources for mm-hmm. them once they arrive.
And they help them connect to communities within the new location they are. So right. they don't just show up in a city and not have anywhere to go, no one to talk to, no understanding of their right. surroundings.
Right, right. So and the thing is, so the question becomes is how do they get out? Not mm-hmm. so much what happens when they're out. How do they get out safely?
Yeah.
And taking into account that now they're shooting planes down.
Right.
Right. So, you know, and even whether it's military or not,
right.
it's not like you can fly in with a military plane and they're going to cease fire. They're going to take right. advantage. It's target practice for them.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of more information on the resources that we've just mentioned, that because this was all developing news and things are just coming up and flying at us right before show started, we weren't able to actually grab all that information. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you where you can go to listen to the episode so that you can have all of the information provided for the resources that we've just talked about. So Adafi actually joined us during episode 215. It is available on our website, which is gaytalk20.com. You can go right under audio podcast and search for episode 215. And within that episode, we really talked about and described a lot of the resources that are available for anyone who's looking for assistance in regards to being able to find resources once you leave a country as a refugee. So that is that. And I feel like there's a lot more that needs to be said mm-hmm. and talked about in regards to this, but we do need to make sure that we go to break because we have Dr. G coming back after the break. And we
I want to say one other thing.
Of course.
Obviously you do. I do. No. So when we were watching the news earlier, mm-hmm. President Biden did say that we have a certain amount of troops that are left right. in Afghanistan to help facilitate safe travel out of the country.
Right.
And I think that with organizations like the Rainbow Railroad, like Asylum Connect, those organizations need to start working with the government and the military to help facilitate getting these people out. And I think that is a pathway they can take, but that pathway needs funding.
It needs funding and it needs to happen very quickly. Yeah. Very quickly. All right. Well, listen, on that note, we do need to take a break. We'll leave you with some music. And when we come back, we have the great Dr. G. Here we go.
She was waiting by the back door, said, "Babe, we gotta leave town. Get your shit, get your suitcase, your dog, your guitar, 'cause we gotta go now, 'cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names, yes, they're coming, just the same. Well, I know you don't want to leave your life. You've had some blood and tears, little joy, little strife, but they're coming. Well, they're coming down the road, yes, they're coming, truth be told. Just say, they got a knapsack full of judgment, hypocrisy and lies, and they're talking so much hateful bullshit they've begun to gather flies. But they're coming. Well, don't look them in the eyes. Yes, they're coming. No surprise. And with so much terror in our past, how are you so surprised it's come to bite you in the ass? Yes, it's coming. Well, it's nipping at your heels. Yes, it's coming for the kill. And don't forget the whiskey. Trade. No, don't forget the whiskey, and don't forget
the station where we can get on that train. Head out to the wastelands where we can change our names. Cause they're coming. Well, they know our fucking names. Yes, they're coming. Just the same.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, welcome back from the break. That, of course, was Wastelands by the incredible Amanda Barrick. Her debut album is available on all the major music streaming services. So make sure you go check out your LGBTQ plus artist and support, support, support. Joining us now, of course, is the always dashing Dr. Evan Goldstein with this month's Tales from the Tale. Welcome back, Dr. G.
How the fuck are you three? I haven't seen you forever.
I know. I feel like
you quit us.
I know. I apologize. I don't know what happened.
Did we get into an argument and you didn't tell us?
No. I think it was just like the summer and shit was happening and I was partying and then
I didn't like his whole pic on Instagram.
They're like, oh, you need to go give a talk on Gay Talk 2.0. I was like, fucking just move that shit to next week.
Yep. He was like, fuck that.
I love you. I love you so much.
I love it, but we have.
That's how I feel. That's how we've been all summer, actually.
Yeah, no. It just happened that, you know, when we were trying to work out the logistics of obviously trying to get you in on the first of every month, things were happening and it just didn't work out. And we're okay with that. People have lives. And, you know, we were looking forward to the fact that we were going to see your face again. And we knew that was going to happen. And it's here. And we're excited.
So obviously Chris didn't show up.
Yeah.
what does that mean?
Well, Chris was here last week,
grain of salt.
But he's at Tanglewood right now enjoying a concert, Mozart thing.
That's perfect. It's all good. Whoever's sitting in his seat, he's a good guy.
That would be Jay.
Much appreciated.
You ready to talk about some ass or what?
Let's talk about some ass. So, Dr. G, why don't you tee us up for this month's Tales from the Tale?
Yeah, so I think we're talking about the number one essential for successful anal sex. Is that what we're talking about today?
That is correct.
I need some advice. Cool.
You need advice. All right. So I think the key of this tale was more for people to think about sex a little bit differently. And understanding that anal is not overtly very difficult to think conceptually. All right, well, what the ass is not complicated, meaning it's skin and it's muscle. I mean, we've spoken about this before. Right. And so is the skin able to accommodate whatever you're inserting? Is the muscle able to fully relax? That's it. Now, a lot of people come and see me with injuries, the most common being what's called an anal fissure, which is a tear. And we've spoken a lot about that. Mm-hmm. Now, in this story, we see a lot of issues with kind of the world not understanding specifically anal sex and gay sex in terms of how they're delivering healthcare. And so today I had two people from middle America where they just don't have access to the right appropriate sexual care. And they have this, which is they've been able to take dick for a long time, no problems at all. And then there was one incident, whether it was a little too rough or positioning was off or there wasn't enough lubrication, where a traumatic event happened and a fissure or a tear developed. And they were never, ever able to recover from that, whether it's shitting with pain, whether it's bleeding, or whether they're able to shit and they're not having any problems other than that they can't fully bottom comfortably. And with that being said, they'll go to their run-of-the-mill doctor, they'll get some creams, the creams don't work, they then go see a proctologist in that area, and they right away want to go to kind of cutting the muscle and trying to relieve some of the pressure so that in theory the tear will heal. But with this story, it goes to talk to people about, is your ass a muscle issue? Is it a skin issue? Or is it a combination of both?
When you say cutting the muscle, what does that mean? Like, so I show up and I'm like, I can't take dick and I'm a power bottom. So this is weird for me. And then they're like, we're going to cut your muscle. Like, what does that mean? What does that look like?
Yeah. So if you think of like the heterosexual world or just the non-anal world, okay, let's say someone's taking a shit and they tear. A lot of the times the reasons why they're tearing is because their muscle is so tight. And that's not to say that we're all loose as gays taking it up the ass, but a lot of people, especially in the anal world, the muscle is not the issue. They're able to take dick, take toys. It's not the problem. What is the problem is that the skin in the area is very thin. And when we're having sex, if we're having sex certain positions, whatever, without lube or bigger toys or fists, what happens is the skin can split and tear and basically cause a cut that's not healing. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're a straight guy or gay guy that doesn't take it up the ass and you have a fissure, if you go to a proctologist, they're going to put you on some creams to help that muscle relax and hopefully allow the tissue to heal. But if with medical treatment it doesn't improve, their next step in the algorithm is to decrease the muscle pressure. And by doing that, for most of them, it's cutting the muscle. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. No. So, but you would not normally suggest that though.
No, I haven't done it in 12 years because there's other ways around it. One being Botox, which relaxes the muscle in a better way than cutting the muscle, and it's temporary. But for our community, it's not the muscle that's actually causing the issue. It's the scar tissue. It's the friction of the buildup of tissue that when you're trying to have sex, it basically pulls the tissue in and out and causes so much friction in the tissue that the tissue cuts or doesn't heal. So this was going to show that here we are again over and over. One, I make mention of saying the reality is that you got to first find a doctor that actually takes an appropriate sexual history. Mm-hmm. If you're going to a proctologist for, let's say, a chronic fissure, please make sure that they ask you about your sexual history and where and what you're doing. Because if they don't, then clearly they don't have the mindset of understanding the right way to take care of the ass, specifically as it relates to your sexual history. So that's really number one.
I have a quick question before we go any further. Now, cutting the muscle, does that affect the anus dramatically? Is there any complications that you would expect from that?
Very good question. So one of the biggest complications that you see with cutting the muscle is what's called incontinence. Now, most of the time you don't see overt fecal incontinence, though definitely it can happen where, you know, you're walking down the street and you can't hold it and then you shit. A lot of it is more a little bit of leakage. A lot of it is more of like, let's say gas where like you can't really, you know, you go into the gym, you're lifting weights, you fart, you know, from that.
Okay.
So the realistic picture is that lateral sphincterotomy is a cut of the muscle and it should be not utilized in the gay space, in the anal space. If someone is offering you a lateral internal sphincterotomy, which is a cut of the muscle, I usually tell people, again, walk out or listen to what they have to say, then do your research to really make sure that that is indeed going to cause resolution of your problem. Because today I spoke to two people on the phone where they had that cut and they were told that by doing that cut, their fissure would heal. And the reality is that they did not take care of the primary problem. So it didn't heal and they wound up going for an unnecessary procedure when if they would have had access to care that's specific to the community, all of that would have been avoided.
So, Dr. G, you took special care to mention in the gay space, not something that you would recommend in the gay space. So in the heterosexual world, where men may not be using their anus for the same reasons we use it, is it still something that they should definitely shy away from, even if you're not actively using your anus for sex? I mean, can complications be?
Yeah. I think nowadays with the use of Botox has really revolutionized specifically a lot of different medical conditions and in the anal world. Now, Botox does a better job of relaxing that muscle, and it's not permanent. So, yes, look, if you've used Botox a couple of times and you've shown that everything has improved, but the realistic picture is the person doesn't want to constantly keep getting Botox, then you can make an argument moving forward, hey, maybe we do cut a little bit of the muscle to allow for that relaxation. But honestly, in 12 years of me doing this, I haven't yet had to do it. And I do see definitely people that don't take it up the ass, that just have primary anal problems. Mm-hmm. And the realistic picture is by doing the appropriate treatment of cleaning up the scar, of making sure that there's nothing else that's going on, and giving Botox, you're able to get them into a much better space and heal them.
For individuals like the two that you are speaking of currently who have gone through the procedure, is there a way to fix it? Can you repair that cut? Or is it now we need to look at different options of how you move forward sexually and generally in the world?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things, you know, just like you mentioned prior, some of them would be a little bit looser because of that cut, right? And looseness is an issue for our community. You know, it's not, oh, I'm shitting on the street or passing gas. It's more of, I can't really feel sexually stimulated anymore. You know, I can't feel my partner, or I'm not tight enough where my partner just doesn't get off anymore. They used to be able to come all up in me and get to do what I want. And now they have to kind of finish outside of me because their sensations aren't there.
Does anyone feel like that was directed at me?
You can tell I was looking at you.
I'm joking. I'm sorry.
So, Trish, is there something you would like to share with the
group? No. So back to what we were talking about, fixing the cut.
So back to fixing the cut. So the issue is, if somebody had a cut of their muscle, there's things that I can do. I don't need to repair that. The reality is that what's done is done, but there's certain things that I can do if there is consequences from that. But what people need to understand is by cutting the muscle, they actually didn't take care of the issue at hand. Mm-hmm. So the people that are in middle America, they'll come to the office, and what we'll do is we'll actually put them to sleep, make them comfortable. I'll clean up the scar tissue, get rid of any of the issues that are related to the scar being the issue. And then that will then allow them to heal in the right way. It had nothing to do with the muscle. And so if the guy came to my office and we started talking sexual history, and he's like, yeah, I'm a big bottom, I've been bottoming forever, and this happened a year ago with an incident, clearly, I know if the guy was able to take dick and fists before, the muscle is able to relax. It's not a tight muscle issue. And then it winds up putting you into the category of, oh, it's the scar tissue. How do I now work the scar tissue to build better tissue in the area? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So if you're going, let's be honest, we look at the United States or whatever, you're bi-coastal, you have two practices, you are obviously in demand. There aren't a lot of doctors like you out there for our community. What would I say if somebody's like, all right, we need to make this cut? Instead, how would I have the conversation? Can we look at, actually, is it scarring? Is it tissue? Like, how do I move forward with the conversation when I don't have access to the brilliant Dr. Evan Goldstein?
Right. I think a couple of things. One is, anybody out there has access to me. There's my email, a DM, you know, you can get in contact with us. There's many things that we can do to coordinate care, whether it's through Skype and walking through people or, you know, through the system, or obviously coming in to the offices. Now, with that said, I think number one is really making sure that they're asking you sexual history and that you are spearheading the conversation of like, hey, I'm gay. I take it up the ass. I have a partner. This is what's going on. I want you to know all of this. Do you take care of clients like this? Do you see clients? Are they able to bottom again? What type of work do you do as it relates to the community? If they're able to give you points A, B, and C and hit it to the point where you feel confident in what they're able to do, all the power to you. Now, then the next phase is, okay, well, let's talk about the surgical options. And if they start talking about cutting the muscle, then I think one is you start to say, okay, well, what are some other options? Considering that I was able to take dick for many, many years, I don't feel as if, and you know, you can say, hey, Gay Talk 2.0 taught me that it's not a muscle issue. What are we actually going to do for the scar tissue and the issue at hand? A lot of people have extra skin in the area, or they're super irritated in the area where there is a cut. And it just starts to become a chronic ailment where it really needs to be spearheaded in the right direction. And if they're not willing to talk about gay sex, if they're not willing to talk about other alternative options like Botox and treatment of the scar tissue, then they don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
And the reality is that you say, thank you very much. And then you kind of coordinate where and what you can to kind of get through it. Mm-hmm. And I'll, you know, I work with anybody. This is not, you know, most insurances cover all of the work that we do. We try to kind of, we understand that people are traveling from all over and have to get, you know, put up in a hotel, et cetera. So we try to bring our costs as low as possible because, you know, I wish there were other people that were doing what we do, because obviously there's a huge amount around the world that is lacking as it relates to access mm-hmm. to appropriate surgical care. And I think that that's what's so great about what we're doing here. And we talk about it all the time, is the goal for me is, you know, I'm busy as fuck. So yes. Okay, great. I drum up business. But the reality is I want to educate people and practitioners so that everybody has access to the same care mm-hmm. that we're able to give in New York and to have it locally.
So that actually brings up a really good point. I wrote down two things, cohort and education, which is what you just brought up, right? Are you working with other doctors to educate them? Are you trying to develop a cohort of doctors that have this knowledge around the country, around the world?
Yes. You know, it's hard because, you know, everybody wants to like do heart surgery or crazy cancer surgery and do ridiculous operations, you know, to try to find somebody that's either gay and out or really LGBT friendly and want to go into LGBT specific surgical care, it's very difficult, you know? So what we're trying to do is, you know, there's definitely some people that I work with in other countries that are trying to spearhead this. We really want to try to consolidate everybody's, you know, practice in a way that starts to standardize how people are treating, you know, certain ailments specifically to the community. And also, obviously, yes, start to educate practitioners. I think what I have found is that the training is so lacking that I need to just go direct to the clients and the patients to mm-hmm. educate them directly. Because at the end of the day, it's very hard to find surgeons that are going to actually change their practice to fit the community. It's mm-hmm. sad, and it's a struggle.
Do you find that you get pushback from other practitioners in regards to the work that you're doing and what you're trying to do for the community?
I think that they were trained in certain ways, and the ways that they were trained is so antiquated that their style does not even take into account sexual practices. It's right. So sad. Mm-hmm. If you have a conversation with them, their approaches are not anywhere near an understanding of what you and everyone in that room would know. You guys know more as it relates to, is it the skin? Is it the muscle? What's restricting it? Were you able to have sex before? What are the things? Like, you guys know more than right. what most people do. And the reality is that what I do surgically is not very difficult. But if you don't have the concept of, well, communities are using the ass for X, Y, and Z, whether it's toys, whether it's cock, whether it's fists, whether it's double penetration, you and I can't even have a conversation like this probably with any of these practitioners, because they're not even there. They're not right. even within the yeah. sphere of yeah. understanding. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them may even have biases against people of our communities, and may be reluctant to even treat individuals.
I think it's a huge issue. It is a huge issue. And I'm very hopeful, though, because obviously a lot of universities are starting to bring sexual education into not only college age kids, but into the medical side. There's a lot of new pushes specifically to really start talking about all of these issues. And, you know, I've been very, very focused on creating the practice, right? But now I'm really starting to say, all right, well, how do we start to educate practitioners and individuals and really start documenting what I'm doing, so that now people can start bringing that into their own practices mm-hmm. in a really good way that's going to help. Even if you're in Middle America or other countries, how do we now start to create and document this so that people are starting to think differently?
Right. Do I smell a professor, Dr. Evan Goldstein, in the near future?
I don't fucking know. I'm so spread thin all over the place. It's ridiculous.
What I'm hearing is that you need to hire me and we need to start a bespoke foundation.
Well, that is in the works. That is in the works.
Why did I know that was? Yeah, of course.
There is in the works. We, you know, again, I think that the next move would be something like that, which is, how do we really start to kind of look at what we've learned over the past 10 years and start to create platforms where others, both medical practitioners and more patients, have access to all of the resources that they need.
And you have 10 years of research to back up everything you're going to present. So that's
totally, totally. You know, I think that, you know, it's hard because I'm not part of a crazy big academic institution. I actually worked to, you know, academic institutions. It's a different game, right? Yeah, you're doing grant work. It's a whole different spearhead of knowledge in a different way. For me, it was, all right, how do we just keep getting people into the office to get them better? And, and it's very difficult to do both. And so now we're really working towards achieving that goal. And it just brings us back to, you know, it's a straightforward procedure. The things that I do are not overtly difficult. It's just understanding community-based practice and what do you need to do surgically to get people back to the dick, right? Mm-hmm. That's the basic end of it. You know, when the disconnect is there, when you can't take what you want when you want it, it becomes a huge fucking problem. Right. And for people not to know that, for people not to respect that and understand that is, I think, a travesty. And people should never go into any situation and feel when they walk out that someone doesn't understand that.
Right.
Well, I also think it's really important too. I mean, you're talking about, you know, sex education at the collegiate level, but I took sex ed in high school. No one ever told me about anal sex. Like, we need to find a way to fund and educate teachers so that they're teaching not only penetrative heterosexual sex, but what it means to be gay and what it means to your body.
Yeah, like for instance, today CNN published a sexual education kind of article all about sexual education for the parents. Do you think that there was any indication of, well, what if your child thinks that they're part of a LGBTQIA community, or what do you do, or how do you have understanding conversations and questions, blah, blah, blah? No. And yet you have Don Lemon and Anderson Cooper, who all take it up the ass, who are really, really huge spokespeople for our community. And yet here we are again and again, where feeling marginalized for discussions that should be very, very, very straightforward. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, I don't know about getting into the high school level, because high school is very difficult because parents are still so much involved. And I don't know, in our time if we're ever going to get a true gay sex platform in high schools. But that was my approach of, well, okay, 18 and older, we're in colleges. How do we start to, you know, this is when people start exploring. How do you, and you're able to now actually have appropriate conversations mm-hmm. of sexual education to hit all the different marks. So that was my approach, was saying, okay, college. Yes, of course. I mean, my kids are growing up and I have so many friends that are don't know where they are in the sexual side of things. And how do you make sure that you're hitting every category to provide people with the support? Mm-hmm. And again, I don't think you need to have all the right answers. I don't think you need to dive crazy deep into everything. I think that you need to provide enough where now someone knows where to go and someone knows the right resources.
Yeah. Right. And I agree with, as far as the educational part with schools, I worked at a high school for some time. But I also realized that what you stated as far as exploration, starting in the college level, not anymore. I mean, we had freshmen coming in 12, 13.
No, 100%. I agree. It's just that I just don't know how
getting
to
reach the parents. Getting the parents on board is always, always an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially LGBTQ issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think it could start. Like, it could start at, like, you know, your local pride centers, at least providing them funding so that they have education for parents if kids come out, like what to expect sexually for your kids and how to have the conversation.
And a lot of the reluctance of having this type of education or even this type of curriculum in a lot of the current school teachings is also generational, right? Mm-hmm. As we go through and cycle through generations, the following generations become more and more and more accepting of different lifestyles and different ways of being and who people are. And so you'll start to see that over the next 20 years, there's going to be a lot of changes happening when now people that are, you know, that generation that's beyond millennials start taking control of situations and making decisions for themselves and being, you know, getting involved in the political arena and things like that. And so things will start changing, but it will take time.
Mm-hmm. Well, have you guys seen the new Gossip Girl?
Watching it. Love it.
First of all, if Evan Mock is listening, I want to have sex with him.
Same.
Adorable person. But with that said, I think you start to see fluidity and, I mean, a craziness as it relates to on HBO Max. Obviously, you have to applaud for all of this mm-hmm. as it relates to starting to really bridge that gap of saying, hey, look, their fluidity is amazing. And then figuring out where you are is all part of the process and that there's nothing wrong with it.
Right.
So I agree with you.
We need to get Hollywood on board.
Hollywood seems to be on board. Yeah. See, sex sells. We all know that.
Oh yeah, no, but I'm speaking in the medical aspect. You know what I mean? Just stuff that they talk about in movies and in TV shows. You got to be. I mean, that's where a lot of places, you know, go to get information.
Yeah,
we work very closely with a lot of different porn sites to try, because a lot of people are trying to kind of, they look at porn and don't realize the differences as it relates to real life.
Yes.
And how do we kind of provide that? And I think that at the end of the day, everybody has Google at their fingertips. Mm-hmm. And now we need to make sure that people have access to the appropriate information mm-hmm. and are seeing people that know exactly what they're supposed to do. And with these, you know, people, I see it over and over again. You go to the wrong guy, they give you the wrong information, you have a surgery, you still can't bottom. It fucks with their lives literally in a terrible way. And then the reality is that it's a 15-minute procedure with a specific technique that allows for it to heal and for people to get back to what they need to sexually.
Mm-hmm.
We all see it. It ruins relationships. If you can't bottom and that's part of your MO, it's really a disastrous, you know, a disastrous event. And the reality is for everybody to know that there is help out there. There are people that know what the fuck we're doing and have access to, and don't feel as if, you know, if you don't have a good insurance, if you don't have any insurance, we are super, super supportive of anybody that needs help. The key component is obviously get in touch with us or someone like us so that we're able to get you the care that you need.
That's amazing. Well, Dr. G, as always, thank you for your wealth of knowledge in regards to a lot of the different topics that we've discussed throughout the past year and even into previous years as well. But before we let you go, we have one more question for you. And this is very quickly, simple answer. Last week, we covered a story in where it was talking about men who jerk off or ejaculate at least 21 times a month are less likely to develop prostate cancer. Where do you stand on that? Is that an accurate statement? Do you think that that's an adequate amount of time to be jerking off a month, or do we need more? What's the deal?
Well, I think the key component for people, especially in the bottoming space, is there's a lot of bottoms that will take dick or whatever and not get off and not finish. And what happens is that, and we've spoken about this before, that the prostate gets so engorged with fluid where you start to develop what's called prostatitis, where the prostate can be significantly irritated, inflamed. Some people have pelvic floor pain, or they're like, they feel like they're kind of sitting on a bike seat and there's something that's super, super tight. Mm-hmm. And they just can't pinpoint what it is. And the reality is, a lot of times it's the prostate getting irritated. And the way to prevent that is to get off, and to get off quite frequently. We speak a lot of, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week. Even if you don't feel sexy, just please dump out the prostatic fluid that is there. What happens is, when things stay stale, they stay stagnant in the prostate. And what happens is that you start to see that, like, your cum can be a little bit more yellow. It's not as white and bright. Sometimes it's brown, or it could even look a little bit bloody, where it has a little pink streaks in it. And that is all to show that there is a lot of times inflammation in the prostate. So the studies that you're showing make sense. The reality is that it's just a pump system. You have to keep the pump going. And so, yes, jerking off quite frequently will help that. And also, on the bottoming space, you have to understand that when we're taking whatever, a lot of time it's hitting the prostate. Mm-hmm. And when it hits the prostate, many people, they don't feel comfort in that. It doesn't feel very good. The key is obviously to kind of rub and kind of really be more of a gentle massage against the prostate, not taking a beating. And a lot of these people will take a beating on the prostate and they won't actually then release the fluid. And so I usually tell people like that, look, you got to get off. Even if you don't feel like it at that moment, when you're showering, cleaning up, whatever it is, make sure you dump that load, because the reality is that the prostate's going to be engorged, cause problems. And we know that chronic prostatitis can lead to prostate cancer. So I think that you're right. The reality is you just got to dump the fucking load, bro.
So basically, yes to milking the tit.
Dump the load, bro.
Dump your load, bro.
I think we have the title for the episode.
Well, Dr. G, as always, you're incredible and amazing, and I thank you for your commitment to our show, and it's great to see your face once again.
Aww, you guys are awesome. Listen, enjoy the rest of the summer.
Nice tan, by the way.
Oh, you know, I'm working it. You know?
Yeah, we know you're working it. It's
I got
working.
Too many grays. Do you see the grays?
Oh, no, that's shit. Working for you, too.
Yes, it is.
Oh, you like that?
Yeah. All of it's working.
Yeah.
All of it's working. Listen,
you guys are my number 3 fans.
All right. Well, don't forget, if you do start a foundation, I want to run it. Anyway, so thank you so much for your time.
All right, guys. I love you all. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you, Dr. G.
Bye.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, that was the incredible Dr. Evan Goldstein. I love that man. I really do. He's just such a wealth of knowledge. And, you know, the beauty is, and the uniqueness about what he does is that when we're talking about gay sex, when we're talking about, you know, things that specifically impact our community.
COVID. Sorry.
He is taking an approach in where he's actually looking out not only for your health, but also in conjunction thinking about how that impacts your sexual life, mm-hmm. which is important because, your sexuality drives your self-esteem, how you feel about yourself, your energy. And if one is out of whack, the other one's going to be affected. So mm-hmm. either way, you know, they're both equally important. So that's amazing. That's amazing.
And you got validated.
Yes.
I know. Well, I mean, I personally didn't get validated. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, some of the things that we share on the show are legit, you know, that makes sense. And I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you, yeah, go blow your load, you know. I mean, I remember the title.
I mean, you can't anybody to go blow their load, but.
Right. So I remember that the title itself that that we had used to talk about, you know, the show in itself was, you know, jerking off may actually save your life. I think it was something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was that I, let me see here. Where was it?
It was last week.
Ejaculate. It may save your life. That's basically what we used. And you know, it's important, especially for men. And so for all of our female listeners, you know, sorry, we may look at ways for you to ensure your healthiness in some way, shape, or form in a future episode. But that one was specifically for the men. All right. Well, shit. We've got a couple of things here. Nick, you had a story in regards to the Gill Foundation.
I did.
Why don't you talk about that, and then we can wrap it up.
All right. So we were just talking about the potential of the Bespoke Foundation, which I think would be amazing. But the Gill Foundation grants $500,000 to a group called Gender Cool to help trans youth. Now, the Gill Foundation contributed this money, and this organization is a gender non-conforming youth group. So this is a group started by kids. And the grant was intended to execute a national public education and storytelling campaign featuring trans youth and their families, helping to counter attacks on these young people, raise awareness of the need for non-discrimination practices. Now, the Gill Foundation, which I did not know much about, their mission is to secure equality for LGBTQ Americans. So I'm sure that there are a lot of organizations out there that are LGBTQ focused that are applying for funding through this organization. So if you are a philanthropist out there and you're looking for a good organization to donate to, check out the Gill Foundation. I did also want to point out that this group, Gender Cool,
I like that name, Gender Cool.
Mm-hmm. So Gender Cool was inspired by the powerful positive experience of one family. Jen and John are the parents of four, including their daughter, Chassie, she, her, who proudly identifies as transgender. In 2017, their search for positive stories about transgender non-binary kiddos like Chassie turned up nearly empty. They could count on one hand the positive stories they found that focused on who these young people are and who they are as talented, amazing individuals and leaders. In a stark contrast, it took 5 seconds to find a tidal wave of misleading, sensational negative content about these amazing young people. So this organization is literally in a, like, their role is they are trying to change the narrative.
Right.
And they just got this amazing gift. It's a game-changing gift. $500,000 is a game-changing gift to literally help shift the narrative for the transgender youth.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
This is the power of foundations. And like, if you look for them, the money is out there.
Right.
The people have the money and they're giving it to organizations. If you look and you research, you can really find ways to support the things that you care most about.
Right. So basically put yourself out there. You know, if you've got a really talented grant writer, start imploring that they, you know, reach out to the money's there. Like mm-hmm. you said, the money is absolutely there, and it's there for whoever wants it.
Yeah. And I mean, just like, for example, with the Olympics, we're starting, like they were saying, you know, they, you know, found a tidal wave of negative stuff, and they could find but a handful of information for positive stories. This past Olympic season, it was a game changer. We had all these transgender athletes that were sharing their story, being out and positive and proud. I mean, those are such positive stories.
Right.
And those are the things that that's what's going to help change the narrative.
Right. And to think that in this past Olympic actually was one of the most represented when it came to LGBTQ plus individuals, not only just transgender individuals, but there were a lot of gay men, women, people who may identify as gender nonconforming that actually competed in the events, who were open and openly out.
And won. And the majority of them won.
And so that's a beautiful thing, and just goes to show you how representation is important. And I always say this line, and if you don't know what that line is by now, then
tally it up.
No. What I always say is visibility is our biggest strength, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that wholeheartedly. If we're not visible, if we don't put ourselves out there, then we're not making the strides and the changes that we need to be made to make sure that we move ahead in society.
100%. I mean, one of their slogans at Gender Cool is Gender Cool is an inspiring disruptor. We are breaking through to millions of people who say they've never met a transgender or non-binary person. They feel conflicted about what they read, see, and hear. And the only way to change a mind is to have a conversation, be honest and visible.
Right. And for all of you, you know, LGBTQ centers and people that are providing services to LGBTQ folks that are nonprofits, you know, get on the wave. There's a current wave right now where corporations are really looking to meet a quota when it comes to supporting LGBTQ plus people. And as horrible as that may sound,
it's not, but it is, but it is.
It's all about that money. You need that funding. Get that money. They're out there. They want to give it away. If you have a grant writer, if you have someone that's actually doing that work, that is probably one of the most important roles that you may have right now in within a nonprofit organization. Reach out to these companies and get their money.
Yeah.
Get them for what they're worth, because if they're willing to give it away, we're willing to take it and use it and put it to good use.
100%.
So, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So good for them. Good for them. All right. Well, it seems that we have reached the end of the road for today's episode. So we're going to, of course, start wrapping things up. So I'm going to toss it over to my queer friend, Trish, here. And I'm going to give her some love so that we can jump into Mama Kim's Minute.
Oh, thank you. All right, everybody. So here's Mama Kim's Minute. Number one, man adopts his daughter's best friend who was rejected by their own dad when they came out. Number two, heroic mom grabs phone from man following her trans son into the bathroom to take pictures of him. Number three, Snickers pulls homophobic commercial from Spanish TV. Number four, LGBTQ athletes win more medals at the Olympics than nearly 200 other nations.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Mr. J, I, unless you want Chris's music, I really want
No, we're good.
I feel like that's not you.
No.
Not do you today. Want mine?
Sure, why not? We'll start with that.
Oh my God, yeah.
On this day in gay history, brought to you by GayTalk20.com. The marriage of Ellen and DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi. When? Today, obviously, August 16th, 2008. We're in California. The two media personalities are married after 4 years together during a window in which California same-sex marriages are legal.
Right. And then remember Prop 8 happened and then that was overturned. And then, you know, the Edith Windsor case and Obergefell case gave us marriage equality. That's amazing.
And can I just say one thing?
Of course.
Yeah. Stop coming for Ellen. She's been through enough.
Right. Well,
thank you.
All right. Well, on that note, I would like to thank everyone for joining us on today's episode. If you love the show, make sure that you go subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting service. By subscribing, you get the latest and greatest of our show delivered right to your web browser or device as soon as our episodes are published. You can also support us on Patreon, which allows your listeners to support the show with a monetary donation. Those donations are collected monthly and can be in any denomination of a dollar or more. Jay?
Next week, we welcome Maria Connor, I believe it's pronounced. And if it's not, I'm sorry.
It could be Connor.
Yeah. Author of the new book, Girl Shock. I dress up as a girl for Halloween, but then she took over my life. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
The cover is amazing.
Yep. So thank you, of course, to our amazing guest, Dr. Evan Goldstein. Always love to talk about the butthole. We love you, so thank you.
All right. And because we can't get enough of the good doctor, here's Nick with a weekly reminder for all you bottoms out there who want to keep your buttholes on point. And yes, we are talking about the future method. So, Nick, take it away.
Thank you. Get the future method today. Each time you clean out with water or enemas, delicate tissues are harmed and cells are damaged, increasing chances of injury and or STDs. The first of its kind, doctor-developed formula gently cleanses before you play without hurting your bum. So visit futuremethod.com to purchase your life-changing bum cleanser and more today.
All right, Mr. J.
And I guess it's time to put a ring on it.
No, it's the cock rings back.
Our show is available on our website, gaytalk20.com, under audio podcast. It is also available as a free download on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher Radio.
I love the way he says podcast.
Podcast.
You can find us on social media, Facebook, Gay Talk 2.0, Instagram, Gay Talk 2.0, Twitter at Gay Talk 20. You can email us at gaytalk2.0 at gaytalk20.com. Tom, it's your turn.
All right. And if you need to reach out to us, just head on over to our website and click on the Contact Us tab. That tab is located at the top of the web browser. There you can leave comments, suggest topics, submit a question for the cast or an individual host. You can also call us too. Phone number is 334-GAY-TALK. And if you need all those digits, it is 334-429-8255. Don't forget that we do stream live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can access that live stream by visiting digitalstreamradio.com. With that, ladies and gents, that is our show. Thank you. And y'all have a good night.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Gay Talk 2.0. Tune in next time for more dish.